Good evening, everyone. Last time we finished Luke chapter 5. Now we come to chapter 6, verse 1. It came to pass on the second Sabbath after the first that he went through the corn fields, or grain fields, not necessarily corn, more like wheat. And his disciples plucked the heads of grain, ears of corn, and did eat, rubbing them in their hands, you know, and just taking wheat and just rubbing it like this and getting the husk off of it, and then you can eat that, or barley. And this was on the Sabbath. They weren't out there harvesting. They were just getting them a little bit of food. And certain of the Pharisees said unto them, "Why do you that which is not lawful to do on the Sabbath days?" And Jesus answering them said, "Have you not read so much as this, what David did when himself was a-hungered, and they which were with him, how he went into the house of God and did take and eat the shewbread and gave also to them that were with him, which is not lawful to eat but for the priest alone?" I've already explained this, that the priest gave it to David and that God allowed this to happen. And it wasn't the fresh bread. It was the bread that had been put out and not eaten yet. And so nothing wrong happened here, and God allowed it all to take place, and they were running for their lives, and they need something to eat quick, and they were very hungry. Here, they were out for a walk on the Sabbath. They were hungry, and they simply picked a few grapes, as it were, pulled a few apples, as it were, picked up a few pears off the ground, as it were, and in this case, got some grain, handful of it, and ate on the Sabbath. Nothing wrong with that. And, of course, Mr. Armstrong said it's nothing wrong with eating out on the Sabbath occasionally. You shouldn't do it all the time. You shouldn't make a big production out of it. You shouldn't go into a place where it's loud and noisy and stressful. But to go somewhere Friday evening, to go somewhere Sabbath and have a nice, quiet meal in a clean, nice place and visit and fellowship while you're having the meal, that's fine. Nothing wrong with that, to do it occasionally. Used to, when we'd run circuits, we would do that occasionally. Most of the time, we'd take our lunch with us, but sometimes we'd do that. And some people don't want to do that because they said, "Well, you're making the waitress work on the Sabbath." No, you aren't. She would work anyway. You're not making her work. That'd be like saying, "Well, I'm not going to turn the light on the Sabbath because it's making an electrical worker work somewhere to keep the generator going." No, you're not. They're going to do that anyway. So it's a matter of the principle of the law that he's talking about here. And that's what Jesus Christ was explaining, and that's what Mr. Armstrong explained. But no, the Pharisees were trying to trap them. So verse 4, speaking of David, "And when he went into the house of God and did take and eat the showbread and gave also to them that were with him, which is not lawful to eat but for the priest alone, and he said unto them that the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath." So I can allow what I want to allow on the Sabbath for the reason I want to allow it, and no law is going to be broken and no sin is going to be committed because I allowed it. And you know, people talk about the Lord's Day. Well, if you want to get technical, the Sabbath is the Lord's day. He's Lord also of the Sabbath. Verse 6, "And it came to pass also on another Sabbath that he entered into the synagogue and taught, and there was a man whose right hand was withered. And the scribes and Pharisees watched him, closely watched him, whether he would heal on the Sabbath day, that they might find an accusation against him. But he knew their thoughts, and said to the man which had the withered hand, 'Rise up and stand forth in the midst.' And he arose and stood forth. Then said Jesus unto them, 'I will ask you one thing. Is it lawful on the Sabbath days to do good or to do evil, to save life or to destroy it?' And looking round about upon them all, he said unto the man, 'Stretch forth your hand.' And he did so, and his hand was restored whole as the other." Think about this withered hand, as I've explained before, just curled up and withered away. Muscles, tendons, bones all deteriorated and decaying. And now Jesus Christ said, "Stretch forth your hand," and he healed him. Now his hand was totally healed and well, just like his other hand. What would be wrong with doing that? But they went crazy when he did it. See, He wasn't supposed to heal on the Sabbath. So I suppose if he was sitting there and somebody went into a convulsion and maybe curled up and couldn't breathe and was about to die, he was supposed to say, well, hope you don't die, but I can't heal you. If you can hang on till sunset, I'll heal you. But if you can't, see you later. Wouldn't it be better for him to heal that person? Of course. And the Sabbath's not broken for doing something good like that. Look how they reacted, verse 11. They were filled with madness, rage. They went crazy over it. And they communed one with the other what they might do to Jesus and how they might destroy him. And it came to pass in those days that he went out into a mountain to pray, and notice this, and continued all night in prayer to God. All through the night he was praying to God, and probably stopping and meditating and then praying and stopping and thinking and praying, because he had a tremendously huge decision to make here. He was about to choose the 12 apostles, and he wanted to really be close to God. So he prayed and prayed and prayed throughout the night. And when it was day, he called unto him his disciples, and of him he chose 12, whom also he named apostles. He named them apostles. And that was this huge decision he had to make. And so he wanted it right, so he prayed to God about it fervently throughout the night. Simon, whom he also named Peter, and Andrew his brother, James and John, Philip and Bartholomew, Matthew and Thomas, James the son of Alphaeus, and Simon called Zealots, or the Zealot, and Judas the brother of James, and Judas Iscariot, which also was the traitor, or became the traitor. And he chose his 12 disciples and then called them apostles. That's how it happened, and that's when it happened, and that's where it happened. Now, he knew them all. He'd been training them all. And now he'll continue to train them. And they knew him. And he knew what he was doing. He saw in them the character, the attitude, the zeal, the ability that was necessary to do what he was about to ask him to do. But Judas betrayed this calling, as we will see. Judas Iscariot, he became a traitor. Verse 17, he came down with them and stood in the plain, a level place, in the company of his disciples and a great multitude of people out of all Judea and Jerusalem, and from the sea coast of Tyre and Sidon, which came to hear him and to be healed of their diseases. And they that were vexed or tormented with unclean spirits, and they were healed. He healed them. And the whole multitude sought to touch him, for there went virtue out of him and healed them all, power and strength from him. And he lifted up his eyes on his disciples. And now he's about to talk about the Beatitudes. And so he went up into a mountain and he came to a level spot, and then he took his disciples and he spoke to them. And this was part of their training. He lifted up his eyes on his disciples, verse 20, and he said, blessed be you poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. You're poor now, but you're going to be rich later. Blessed are you that hunger now, for you shall be filled. You might be going hungry, but the time is coming when you're going to be filled, and even spiritually so. Blessed are you that weep now, for you shall laugh. You're having a tough time with some things that cause you to mourn, but the time is coming when you're going to laugh. And notice it says here, laugh. I mean, it's a tremendous emotion. And there's a time to laugh. God's people should be happy. We should have peace of mind. Yes, there's tough times, but there's also happy times and times for laughter and joy and rejoicing and having fun and doing all of that in balance. I've seen some people, they don't laugh about anything. They've forgotten how to laugh. They haven't laughed so long that if they did, they'd have stretch marks on their face. God's people should be people who enjoy life. They're warm, they're friendly, they're outgoing. They're upbeat, they're positive. They're happy and laughing and telling good jokes, not putting one another down, not undercutting anybody, but good-natured happiness and a little bit of good-natured teasing. And of course, there's a time for sadness. And of course, there's a time when there's pain and suffering, and we all suffer right along with one another. But there's also a time for joy and for happiness and for fun and for laughter. He talks about that right here. Time is coming when you're going to laugh. Blessed are you when men shall hate you, and when they shall separate you from their company and shall reproach you or revile you and cast out your name as evil for the Son of Man's sake. They're going to make fun of you because you follow me. They're going to make fun of you because you obey me, you serve me. They're going to try to harm you because you represent me. Blessed are you when that happens to you, because you're suffering for my sake, and you'll be blessed for that. Rejoice you in that day and leap for joy, for behold, your reward is great in heaven. For in the like manner did their fathers unto the prophets. Oh, you're some of those old Armstrong people. You keep that old Sabbath, that old commandment, that law, those old commandments, those old Jewish holy days, and so on and so forth. Well, you just carry right on doing the right thing. You'll be blessed for it. Don't be ashamed of it. Don't apologize for it. Don't make excuses. You know, there's a proverb that says, the wicked flee when none pursue, but the righteous are as bold as a lion. They're not rude, but they're bold. They've got a snap to their eye and a bounce to their step and a smile on their face, and they love being in the church, and they love knowing the truth, and they love following Jesus Christ. They don't walk around with their head hung down because, oh, I'm a Christian. We don't do that in God's church. Some people do in the world, but some people in the world don't know the truth about being a Christian, but I have to hand it to them. They do stand up for what they believe, even though they don't know the truth, and some of them have even been martyred for it just recently by this old ISIS organization. Horrible. Rejoice you in that day and leap for joy. You're doing it for my name's sake. For behold, your reward is great in heaven, for in the like manner did their fathers unto the prophets. But woe unto you that are rich, for you have received your consolation. Now, there's some people who are rich who handle it very, very well, and they are blessed for it. But so often, they don't handle it well, and a lot of people don't handle being poor either. I'm humble and proud of it, and I'm poor, and, you know, I'm fine with being poor. Well, that's not what God wants either. But so often, people get caught up in things and then leave God out of the picture. And that's what he's saying here. You have received your consolation. Woe unto you that are full, for you shall hunger. Woe unto you that laugh now, for you shall mourn and weep. In other words, you're not laughing because of the right things, and you're not rejoicing because of the right things. You're laughing and rejoicing over evil and over rebellion and over what the world has to offer. Well, that's going to backfire on you. Woe unto you when all men shall speak well of you, for so did their fathers to the false prophets. You know, when everybody speaks well of somebody and everybody likes an individual, that tells me that that individual is a politician. And he's trying to play both ends against the middle. Let's notice John chapter 15. John chapter 15 and verse 19. It says in John 15, verse 19, if you were of the world would love his own, but because you are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. If you obey God, there's going to be some people that don't like you because you are obeying God. They may not put it that way, but that's why. But if you obey God, he's going to like you, and those that obey God will like you. See, when you please God, you will please those that please God. You might not please those that are not pleasing God, and they might really dislike you and even hate you for it. That's okay. Don't compromise in order to keep them happy. That's one thing that disgusts me about politicians. They just try to figure out what they can say and do that'll make everybody like them. I mean, I don't even watch news that much anymore. It's so hideous, but there was this guy went to this meeting and he said, all lives matter, you know, Black lives matter, white lives matter, all lives matter. And oh, they got on his case and they were putting him down, and he apologized for saying that because the crowd in the room was unhappy with him. So he said, well, I shouldn't have said it. I shouldn't have said it. I'm sorry. Well, why did he apologize for that? You know why? Because he's a politician. And he wanted those people in that room to like him. So he catered to them. Anytime you find somebody trying to get everybody to like him, he's compromising or she's compromising on the truth and playing both ends against the middle. If you stand for what's right and you don't budge and you let the chips fall where they may, you're not mean about it or hateful about it, but you're firm about it, there's going to be some people who don't like you because of that and will say bad things about you because of that. And you won't compromise and backtrack and squirm around to figure out what you can say to win them back. No, you're going to keep on standing on what is right. And you won't budge one iota on that. And so that's what he's talking about here. Woe unto you when all men speak well of you, for so did their fathers to the false prophets. You're not obeying me if everybody's speaking well of you. Those that really are trying to do the right thing will speak well of you, and that's what counts. But those who want to go their own way, and they resent you, and you make them feel guilty, they're not going to speak well of you. That's okay. That's part of doing the right thing. That comes with the territory. Verse 27, but I say unto you which hear, love your enemies, do good to them which hate you. That's hard to do. That's graduate Christianity right there. Returning good for evil. Doesn't mean you become a throw rug. Sometimes the best thing you do is just get away from somebody like that. But other times when you have a chance to help them out or do something good, even though they did something bad to you, you return good for evil. That's Christianity. That's what Christ is like. Love your enemies, do good to them that hate you, bless them that curse you, and pray for them which despitefully use you. Don't try to get back at them. Pray for them. And bless them that curse you. That doesn't mean when somebody cusses you out, you say, bless you, my son. That doesn't mean that. But it means stay quiet, or if you say something nice back. Don't fire back a cuss word. And you know, if you don't like somebody or somebody doesn't like you, I'll tell you something that really helps. Pray for them. Go ahead and pray for them. Ask God to have mercy on them. Ask God to help them change. Ask God to get their attention. Ask God to protect you from them. But don't try to get vengeance and don't try to get even. That's the principle he's talking about here. It's talking about a principle. It's talking about an attitude. That's what we're reading about right here in this section of Scripture. An attitude of a Christian, like Jesus Christ had. And unto him that smites you on one cheek, offer also the other. And him that takes away your cloak, forbid not to take your coat also. It's just talking about if somebody needs something, help them out, whether they've not treated you right or not. And if somebody were to slap you because you're in the church, don't slap them back. And don't apologize so they won't slap you again. Stay firm, and if it means being slapped again, okay. One guy told me one time, he said, somebody ever slaps me on the cheek, I'm going to let him hit the other cheek, and then I'm going to beat the daylights out of him, because it doesn't say what to do after you've turned the other cheek. If you get hit on one cheek, turn the other cheek, and if you're still standing or if you're still alive, then you can really get him. No, that's not what it's saying. It's a principle here of returning good for evil and taking whatever comes as a result of obeying God. And setting the example of doing the right thing, whether the other person does or not. Verse 30, give to every man that asks of you, and of him that takes away your goods, ask them not again. That's not talking about crime here. I'm not going to give, if some guy walks up to me and says, give me $100, I'm not going to say, okay. Give me another $100, okay. If somebody breaks into my van, I'm not going to say, oh, that's fine. Go ahead and do it again. That's fine. You want me to help you do it? It's not talking about crime here. It's talking about things that happen as a result of you obeying God, and you don't take it out on the person. You return good for evil. You set the right example. But you report crime, and you call the police, and you hope they catch the criminal so they won't do that to you again or to anybody else. And it's all coming down to this point, this principle, this attitude, right here in verse 31. As you would that men should do to you, do you also to them likewise. That's called the golden rule, but the Bible doesn't call it that. It's the principle of Christianity, really. For if you love them which love you, what thank have you? For sinners also love those that love them. It's easy to be nice to people that like you. Are you able to be nice to people that don't like you? And maybe sometimes being nice to them is just leaving them alone or not being around them. But other times, if there's something you do to help them, you help them. If it's a reasonable something. And if you do good to them which do good to you, what thank have you? For sinners also do even the same. And if you lend to them of whom you hope to receive, what thank have you? For sinners also lend to sinners to receive as much again. It doesn't mean now you're supposed to just lend out money to everybody, but there are circumstances and situations where somebody needs some help and you have it and you can help them a little bit. You may not ever see that again, but God will make it up. But you got to use wisdom and not be foolish. Verse 35, love your enemies because you see they're made in the image of God. You don't wish them bad or evil. And do good and lend, hoping for nothing again, and your reward shall be great and you shall be the children of the highest. Now notice, this is what it's all leading to, brethren. It's talking about Christianity and us being like Jesus Christ, which is what Christianity is. Now look at this. Isn't this amazing? This is one of the most amazing verses in the Bible right here. And you shall be the children of the highest, for he is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. And you know, I've done these things from time to time, and it just amazes people. When they think you're going to do back to them what they just did to you and you don't do that, but rather you do something good, it just blows them away sometimes. And it's very wonderful and we can be very thankful that God returned good to us in spite of the bad we did toward him before we knew better and even after we knew better. He's very forgiving. Look at this. Verse 35, and you shall be the children of the highest, for he is kind unto the unthankful. Kind. And to the evil. Doesn't agree with them. Doesn't approve of them. But he has mercy. He's kind. Be you therefore merciful, as your Father also is merciful. That's what he wants to see in us. He wants to see us be merciful. Because he's merciful. And if we want him to be merciful toward us, we need to be merciful toward others. Now, mercy is not a matter of lawlessness. It's not a matter of being permissive. It's a matter of showing mercy when it's not required and maybe not expected. But it'll be appreciated and used properly, and so we show it instead of retaliation. Verse 37, judge not, and you shall not be judged. Condemn not, and you shall not be condemned. Forgive, and you shall be forgiven. That's the attitude. Now look at this. Once again, one of the most important verses in the whole Bible, this attitude. Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that you meet withal, it shall be measured to you again. What a tremendous principle in life. See, a lot of times when we hear about whatever you sow, you reap, we look at that in a negative way. You do bad, you're going to reap bad, and that's true. But it's just as much a positive as it is a negative principle. In fact, more so, I believe. What about this? You do good, and you'll reap good. I'm reminded of how we used to pick peas in the garden when I read verse 38. The way we used to pick peas in the garden, we'd take a bushel basket, and we'd go out there and we'd pick the peas. And if you've ever picked peas, you can fill a basket up, and there's lots of air holes in there and lots of room for more, but there it looks like it's full. And our dad would come along and say, you can get a lot more peas in that basket than that. Push them down, shake them around, push them all down, shake them down, pack them in. And when we got through doing that, it's only about half full. Then we'd pick some more peas and push them down, shake them around. And finally, after we really, really rearranged everything and had a basket full of peas, it was heavy, but it was full. And that's the way giving does. It produces that kind of results. When we have this attitude of giving, it's more blessed to give than to receive. This attitude of giving mercy, this attitude of cutting some slack, not agreeing with evil, but being merciful. This attitude of giving without expecting something back. This attitude of giving when somebody didn't give something to us. I've known people literally who have said this, I'm not inviting them over to our house. They never invite us over to their house. Well, I've invited them over to our house twice. They've only invited us over to their house once, so they still owe us one. What about this? Well, we like having them over whether they ever have us over or not. You give. If they don't give, that's their problem. But you're clear because you have an attitude of give. And it'll come back to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that you mete out with all, it shall be measured to you again. He spoke a parable unto them, can the blind lead the blind? Shall they not both fall into the ditch? And that's certainly true when it comes to the truth. You want somebody to lead you that knows the truth and that stands for the truth and preaches the truth and lives the truth, which Christ does and which his true ministers do. But you get somebody that doesn't know the truth, doesn't believe the truth, not interested in the truth, and follow them, you're going to go where they're going, right over into the ditch, because they're blind spiritually. Verse 40. Now, I want to tie a verse in with verse 38 here. Proverbs 11. Proverbs 11 and verse, I think it's 25. Yeah, I love this. Proverbs 11, verse 25. Look at this. The liberal soul, that's not the Democrat or the Republican, but it's the generous soul, the generous person. The liberal soul, the generous person, shall be made fat or rich or be taken care of, be blessed. And he that waters shall be watered also himself. That ties right in with whatever you sow, you reap. That ties right in with verse 38 of Luke 6. That's Proverbs 11, 25. Okay, now down to verse 40. The disciple is not above his master, but everyone that is perfect shall be as his master, or mature and growing and trained well. Doesn't mean he's going to overtake his master. It means the master is going to bring him up and he'll be right there with him and serving if he learns and produces well. Verse 41. And why beholdest thou the mote, the speck, that is in your brother's eye, but receives not the beam or the plank that is in your own eye? Another word is the plank. In other words, why are you so worried about this little bitty splinter in someone's eye and you got this big pole in your eye? Why are you worried about some little problem somebody has and you're just loaded down with these huge problems, is what it's saying. But you can't see that for seeing the little speck or a little problem that your brother has or that somebody else has. Verse 42, either how can you say to your brother, brother, let me pull out the mote that is in your eye, when you yourself beholds not the beam that is in your own eye? You hypocrite, cast out first the beam out of your own eye, and then shall you see clearly to pull out the mote that is in your brother's eye. Part of what's going to happen is when we get rid of the problem that we're loaded down with, we probably won't even notice the little problem that somebody else has. In other words, let's take care of our own situation and mind our own business and work on our own problems and pray about what we think we might see in somebody else. But we don't need to go around correcting people and evaluating people and analyzing people and pointing things out to people while we ourselves are just loaded down with things that are much worse than what they have. Now, I'm not talking about you and the Enduring Church of God unless it fits. And if the shoe fits, then wear it and do something about it. But I mean, we're all this way at one time or the other in the past and might even get this way from time to time now. Let's just make sure that we examine ourselves and correct it if we are this way. And let's make sure we don't ever become this way if we are not. Verse 43. For a good tree brings not forth corrupt fruit, neither does a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. But every tree is known by his own fruit. For of thorns men do not gather figs, nor of a bramble bush gather they grapes. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth that which is good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings forth that which is evil. For of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaks. I've seen that principle over and over and over again. What's inside of you sooner or later will come out, and that's good. And make it good inside, and it'll be good when it comes out. But some people, it's not so good inside, but they try to pretend like it is on the outside, but sooner or later it's going to come out. Because a rotten tree is not going to bring forth good fruit. And a good tree is not going to bring forth rotten fruit. We want to be a good tree that brings forth good fruit. And we want to be right on the inside so it'll be right on the outside. And not try to cover up and be a hypocrite. Just get it squared away. Verse 46, a famous verse, one that we need to have in our scriptural vocabulary. Why call you me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? We're living in a time when people don't do. They might listen, they might hear, they might talk, but they won't do. It's a rare thing to see people who will actually do something. Do what is right. Correct what needs to be corrected. Learn from what's pointed out and put it into practice. Very rare to see that nowadays. We have a lot of talkers and a lot of listeners, but few doers in this world today. In politics, in any facet of society, and in religion. Well, in the enduring Church of God, we want to be listeners, and we want to learn, and we want to have good conversation, and we want to be doers. We change. We respond. We obey. We correct what needs to be corrected. Like this man we're about to read about. And why call you me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? Whosoever comes to me and hears my sayings and does them, I will show you to whom he is like. And that's a rare person. I'm going to come, I'm going to hear, and I'm going to do what you say. That's great. Look how it turns out. Verse 48. He is like a man which built a house, digged deep, laid the foundation on a rock, and when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock, because he was a doer. He went deep into God's word and deep into this way of life, and he put down spiritual roots, and he was firmly embedded in God's church and in God's way. So when he gets hit, ambushed, bushwhacked, pressure comes, he stays put because he's a doer and she's a doer. Verse 49, but he that hears and does not is like a man that without a foundation built a house upon the earth, against which the stream did beat vehemently, and look at the word, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great. I heard, I talked, but I didn't do. And I'll just slide on by and somehow or the other skate on through and into the kingdom. No, God's going to test us, and he'll test us hard enough so that if we didn't put that foundation he told us to put down, we'll collapse. We won't make it. But if we did put that foundation he told us to put down, we put it down and we keep it strong, we don't collapse. And great will be our reward. And we won't be able to be shaken up spiritually. We'll be steady and strong and stable and stay put because, as it says, we are founded upon the rock, Jesus Christ, not founded upon sand, this world, and Satan, and passing pleasures. Not founded on that, but founded on the truth. That's what he's telling us right here in these wonderful life-giving and life-saving verses. I hope we turn and read them often, and I hope we turn and study them. Here tonight, we've gone through some of the most important passages in the whole Bible. And let's turn and read them from time to time, right here in these chapters of Luke, and be inspired and strengthened and uplifted and helped by them. Okay, well, we've run out of time, so we'll stop there and pick it up with chapter 7 next time. This is Charles Bryce with the Enduring Church of God.